Hello, everybody, and welcome to Mom of the Hard Kid. I want to talk to all of you parents out there who are absolutely reeling, absolutely falling apart because of the behavior of your children. Now, one of the big themes that's been going on around the Facebook and other support group pages for different and various types of children issues is when you feel so overwhelmed by their behavior and absolutely trapped in your situation. Because the truth is, yeah, you are. You're trapped in that situation. You're overwhelmed. You don't know what to do anymore. You've probably exhausted every option that you can think of. You are worn out. And every time you go seek for help, there isn't any. And there isn't any because people don't understand your situation, or you've dipped down into such an intensity of desperation that nobody values your opinion anymore. They think the problems are all your fault. They don't understand those types of children. They don't understand just how deep you can get in these kinds of situations. And so you have nobody out there who's helping you. You're in the middle of a lake and you're drowning, and everyone's like, well, you should have done better. Like, I'm drowning, I'm doing the best that I can. And they're like, try harder and give more hugs. Right? You're exhausted. You're worn out. You're floundering and you're done. And you're trying to sit there. And I'm going to use the in the middle of the lake example again. You're in the middle of the lake. You're treading water. Your face is barely above. Sometimes it's not. And sometimes, I don't know what pops you back to take another breath above, but somehow you're still holding on and you don't know how, and you're done. You're like, I don't have another ounce of energy in my body. I don't have another breath that I can take. You're spent. Because as much as we love these kids, and you can have two things happen at the same time. You can love your kids and find them exhausting. But as much as you are exhausted by these children and there's no one to help you, you're sitting there thinking, what in the world am I going to do? Now, the big theme that's coming up is a lot of people are trying to, and when I say this, I'm going to put a disclaimer out there for children who, parents of children who are normal, not neurodivergent, like who fall into a more normal category, and say that this falls into the more intense category here, and that it's real and severe, and I hold no judgment. I can relate to some of these feelings in my own way, but not exactly, if that makes sense. So here are these people, and they are like, I got to get out of this. I got to get out of this situation. Either they have entered into a relationship with someone with whom they are not married, and it's that person's child, or sometimes it's a shared custody situation. Usually in these types of discussions, it's usually not that person's biological child. It's usually their partner's biological child. And the reason why is because when you come from an adoption, there is always that the discussion is sort of more, let's disrupt this adoption. How do I disrupt this adoption? Instead of, I got to get out of here. So when there's a biological factor, you can't disrupt the adoption, right? It changes, which is why when you go to court, they're like, hey, just so you know, this is exactly like their biological child. And then it turns out they're like, we say that because we know for a fact that it is too much for any one person to handle. So we're trying to guilt you before this even starts. So to these people, I am going to make a few comments, but I'm going to start with this disclaimer. First, there does come a point where you do just have to do you. I'm not going to judge you for that. I'm not going to hold that against you. I know for a fact that this kind of life with these kinds of kids gets so deeply heavy, so whirlwind, mud pit, any kind of analogy, but they're all terrible analogies. And I know that that is real. And I don't deny it. I know it's real. So I'm going to be giving this next portion to the people who want to stay. Because there's a reality to the people that want to stay. And there's that other cluster of people who are feeling this and haven't quite gotten to the I want to leave part yet. So we're going to talk about the potential of life, even with someone who makes your life miserable. The other day, my daughter did something at school that kind of threw me into this whole, I don't know what to do. There's nothing to do. Every time I think I take a step forward, I take a step back, you know, into that kind of mess. And it was not that big of a thing, but it was a big thing. So she's 6 years old. Her teacher had put the teacher's hand on my daughter's desk. And my daughter did not like that she was being told what to do. And she was cutting out this flower. So she stabbed her teacher with the scissors because she didn't want the teacher to get fingerprints on her desk. And it's one of those moments where you're just sitting there like, oh my gosh, like we have made thousands of miles of progress. Where in the world did that come from? Right. So we have made progress, and that is different from when you haven't made progress, but I'm still going to try and connect these situations. So there is a massive feeling of helplessness, but one of the reasons you feel helpless is because you tie that child's responses to things, their reactions to things, to your ability to parent. And what I mean by that is I would be really surprised if you did not also think, but I should be able to fix this, but I should be able to make this better, but I shouldn't be this upset about it, and that I shouldn't be this affected by it. But the truth is, you are totally normal. Your reactions to these situations, with very few exceptions, are normal reactions to this kind of stress and this kind of behavior and this kind of hatred and this kind of vitriol. Speaking specifically about reactive attachment children, and more specifically about severe reactive attachment, when you have somebody who hates you so deeply that they are willing to make absolutely everything awful in your life, I want you to remember two things. And the first thing is, this kid did not put themselves here. I know it looks like it. I know every decision that they make looks like it. I know that when you are like, oh my gosh, why can't you make a single good decision here? Why can't you do this? Or why are you reacting this way in a way that is so mean, trying to ruin my life? I want you to remember that. And I know that there's a part of you right now saying, I don't care. And it's okay. You don't have to care. But your child put themselves nowhere here. Your child is here because of the actions of a grown adult somewhere else, or, you know, with a few exceptions. But it is somebody else's fault that your child is acting like this. And I remember in our own situation where I was so angry at my daughter's biological parents because I thought, you morons made these decisions that ruined my daughter's brain. You don't, and then you get to walk off and you get to be okay. And if I had wanted to disrupt our adoption, I would get a criminal record, while these dum-dums who ingested so many drugs and alcohol and neglected their baby, they're walking around free. They just don't have their baby, which of course is a punishment in and of itself. But I have to have a criminal record when I can't do it. But if they can't do it and they ruin her, they're just fine. It is a really frustrating place to be. But you have to remember, and even if it is your spouse's and his ex-wife's daughter or whatever situation you have, that child did not do this to themselves. Your child is disabled. And when you can look at a child who has regular disabilities, and I say this, you know, with the caveat that, of course, no disability is regular, or whatever it is that makes you feel better about that phraseology, that terminology, is when you have someone who is missing a limb or who has extra chromosomes, you can see those things with that person. And you are able to give that person a pass for certain behaviors because you can visually see the things that are wrong with that child. So one of the children that we fostered, she was the cutest little baby. Only she was a big baby. She was 11 months old, but she had been neglected and she had the physical everything of a 3-month-old baby. She couldn't eat. She couldn't sit. She had multiple chromosomal abnormalities, which is kind of unique. And she was unable to eat without a feeding tube, but she also had a very hard time breathing. So all of these difficult things with this baby, but you could look past that and see the soul of this beautiful baby. So you look into her eyes and you knew that she was looking to see you inside your eyes, right? And you would look and be like, I know you're 11 months old. I know that you don't know how to eat. I know that you don't know how to sit. I know that you don't know how to crawl. All of those things, but it was okay because you could assign why they were behaving in that way. Well, when you have a child who has reactive attachment disorder or some other mental disorder, you cannot see that. That is hidden from view. And especially with things like reactive attachment disorder or mood disorder or oppositional defiant disorder, when you have those kind of things coming at you, and here's the little disclaimer that I'm just a mom that just researches this, so there's that. But when you have those kinds of things, nobody can see that. And it seems truly personal. It seems truly offensive. And no, regardless of how it seems, it is in reality very scary or inconvenient or exhausting, never endingly exhausting. Those are the realities that come from the fact that your child is disabled mentally and there is nothing anybody knows what to do with it. You can have several different personality types that don't have limbs. You can have several different personality types that have chromosomal abnormalities, or insert whatever other thing you can in that. You can have different types of personalities. But when you have someone who has reactive attachment disorder and it's severe, you tend to have the same type of personality. It's mean. It's vindictive. It is there's some words that I don't want to say, but occasionally it's homicidal tendencies. Like it's very intense to have a child like this. And none of it is easily manageable as an individual or even as a couple or as an entire family. In our situation, our child with reactive attachment is the youngest. And because of that, I have 3 biological children whom help corral this little one, right? And my husband, when he gets to be home, he helps corral this little one. So in our house, we have 5 people actively trying to teach, trying to redirect this child. We have so many things that are working in our favor on this, and she's still hard. She's still, and she's come so far. So far. But we have everything that's on our side for this, right? So if you have none of those things, and if your child has not made that progress and all those things, it feels absolutely personal. I remember when I first got my daughter in foster care, she had an aunt who had been taking care of her. And the aunt called me and she said, "She's a demon, isn't she?" And I was, because she used to do this voice. And she was like, I thought it was funny, but apparently the aunt did not think it was funny. So she would use this. Now, mind you, she is 11 months old. And so she has been using this tactic with her aunt because she knew it bothered her. So she would do this little demonish voice to kind of make her aunt upset. Don't ask me any of the scientific parts of this. I do not know. Don't ask me why or how. I do not know. I just know she would do this. So one of the things that she said is that, oh, this baby's a demon. I'm scared of her. But she kind of said it in a fairly lighthearted and yet mildly serious way, right? So when she's doing the demon voice on me, I'm laughing. I think it's hilarious that this adorable little baby is doing a demon voice. I think it's funny. And then we all started doing it back to her because we thought it was like a thing. And then we'd all be like, we thought it was hilarious. So then it turned out to not be useful for her and she quit doing it, right? But when my three biological kids were little and my mom friends, you know, they'd make a joke that the only thing that would keep our love for our little kids is when we went into the bedroom and we saw them sleeping, right? You know, you're like, oh, it just fills up my love bucket and I can try again tomorrow, you know? And then you deal with tomorrow's tantrums and blah, blah, blah. But when you have a child who is exhausting, you don't get that refresh. You look at them sleep and you're like, oh my gosh, they're going to wake up tomorrow. It's going to start again. It's so, so hard. And I remember looking at this little baby and thinking, there's evil here. Like, there's evil in here. She's trying so hard. And when I say baby, I mean at 18 months old when her symptoms got really bad. I just thought, I can't believe this. I can't believe this is inside. And what I wish I had been able to do, which I couldn't because I didn't know she had any of this stuff. I was just so confused. I wish I'd been able to say, no, self, that is a broken baby. What you are seeing is inside her brain is broken. She's not getting the proper neuron synapse firing. She's not getting any of the things she's supposed to. She didn't develop any of the things most babies do because between the drugs and the alcohol and the neglect, she doesn't have it. So when we sit as parents, and this is the second thing I'd like to tell you, we sit as parents and we think, hey, let's just love them a bunch. These kids don't need love yet. These kids need all of those pieces that we're missing. And some of you are like, oh my gosh, but my kid is 14. How do I do this? I don't think it matters. I think when you focus on these pieces that are missing, the self-regulation pieces, the recognizing you're not the center of the world pieces, when you can focus on those pieces and heal that brain, I think you can have success. Now, mind you, success looks different for every kid. For one kid, you're not even going to see it. You're just going to see that they come home from school. You're not even going to know that they didn't punch that other kid that they really wanted to. But that's going to be success. And you're going to have another kid whose success is that they go talk to somebody that they're not really excited to talk about. And to someone else, it might be that they hold a job. And to another one, it might be that they have a relationship. And to another one, it might be that they have a pet and they properly care for it. Like, every single one of these children is going to have a different level of success than every other one of these children. And one of the hard things about this is that there is a very good chance that that level of success is not going to look anywhere close to the levels of success you're going to see in other children who have not been affected by these things that these children have been affected by. But when you're sitting there and you're thinking, love, I just need to give them more love, or I need to give them more attention, or I need to give them more and I need to give them more. No, you don't. That kid doesn't need more love. That kid might need a little additional attention. That child needs those pieces it was missing. If you think of life and development of life and how they say in the first 3 years, there's so many neural connections that are happening. And of course, I only know this in as much as I've researched as just a mom, but there's so many neural connections happening in those first 3 years that people are like, oh, they're just a sponge. They're just taking in so much information. And then you think of life as like a pyramid, like the Egyptian pyramids. the base is huge. And then as you develop up, you needed that huge foundation at the bottom for the top to work. And these kids are missing that huge foundation at the bottom. And could you imagine the insecurity you would feel if you didn't understand connection, if you didn't understand relationship, if you didn't understand the value you have as a human being? It would feel like you were constantly spiraling. I want you to think of you as the parent and the worst experience that you've ever had and how you're just like, I don't think I can do this. Oh my gosh. And some of you might be like, that's my parenting. Then think about it. I want you to think about how maybe you've had a relationship that fell apart and you're like, oh my gosh, I must not be valuable. And then think about these kids and how they live in that every minute of every day because their brains never learned that other part. They learn the part about rejection. They learn the part about not being good enough. They learn the part about not making good decisions and having people mad at them all the time. They learned all those things, but they never learned the other part. Now, I know this sounds like, oh, well, then the love must be the thing. But the actual foundations before the love, or at least love in the way that adults think about it, the actual foundations are more important than the kind words and the hugs and those kinds of things that we associate as showing love. But knowing your parameters of your body, for example, these babies, when you hold them, learn where they end and you begin. Well, these neglected babies never learned that. They don't understand. It's just not in their brain. So you have to teach them where they end and where something else begins. And this can be done with affectionate things for hugs. What we did is she was young and I would hold her and she would drink this drink. It was a vitamin C drink. And we would watch TV together. Because it was giving her that, oh, look, mom is touching me. Here's where I end. Here's where she begins. And we were putting those very basic things together. Now, there are some therapists out there who are trained in this who would probably know better than me. But I'm going to tell you, look this up. This is absolutely critical. And if your child is older, and you can go with these specialists and take their advice more than me. But what I would recommend as just a mom is putting your child in a sport or an activity where they are constantly having their body against something else. And so like gymnastics, like you roll on the mat and their body and the mat are in contact with each other, or, you know, something of that effect. I know that karate is like one that all of us who have violent children are like, no. But pick something where their body can feel that it has an endpoint. And you're also missing things like the nonverbal communication. My daughter, oh goodness, she will scan me so completely with her eyes. She knows exactly what I'm feeling. I cannot trick her. I don't try to trick her. All of those things. She can scan me and she knows it, but she doesn't understand sitting there and just seeing someone be relaxed and being okay with that. So to provide opportunities where you have like some music on to sort of keep their brain going, provide quiet moments, which they're not going to give you. This is going to take years to get, but to be able to have those things. But one of the things, and the absolute biggest part of this, is honesty. When I talk about the scanning of the eyes, and you can see if your kid does this, but you will see her little pupils fluctuate as she's trying to read my eyes and to read my face and to see what it is. Because if you think about it, this is a fight or flight situation where she's trying to assess her danger level. And she doesn't ever kick out of this. Okay, she's starting to sometimes kick out of this, but when it comes to a high level situation, she kicks right back into this very quickly. So one of the most important things you can do is build that trust. every single one of these babies that have reactive attachment disorder have been violated in the trust category. Their mother, whom they were in their stomach, has either died and left them or has neglected them in some way, or they were put in the NICU and they feel a rejection that might be real and might not be real, but they feel it. And there is a trust situation that I believe is connected with your fight or flight response, and it is an astronomically critical part of developing attachment with these children. So all of you parents out there who are like, I'm done, I cannot do this anymore, I want you to flip off the switch that says, I need to show my child love, care, and affection. And I want you to switch on the one that says, I need to show my child complete honesty so we can gain trust. And you can do that with love and affection, but you have got to show complete honesty. Now, we've hit a part right now where I am like, oh no, I feel like we have attachment and we're morphing into like traditional childhood. And so I'm trying to figure that out. But before we hit this point, it is 150,000% honesty. When you're mad, you can say, actually, I'm so angry. I'll get over it in a few minutes. It's not that big of a deal, but I'm angry right now. And I'm angry because of this, but I know I'm going to be okay. And in this, you are able to calm their fears, because I'm a firm believer that these kids have something in them that's like, I know if I fail, then they're going to leave me. While at the same time, this is where I think that the connection between borderline personality comes in, where they're like, I think they're going to leave me if they disapprove of anything that I have. And then there's also but I'm going to make them hate me so that I know why they're leaving me. Right. So that I just make this happen ahead of time. It won't hurt my feelings, kind of a thing. But if you give them purely the pure of who you are and you admit to them your deficiencies. So one of the things I say is, I'm sorry, I need you to stop talking because I have sensory overload right now. It's too much. If you can't, I mean, earplugs in, and then you're going to know that I couldn't handle it for this reason. And this is why I'm angry. And this is why I'm touchy. And if you can't stop, I'm going to put the earplugs in. And then you're going to just have to deal with me with earplugs in. And by verbally giving that information to my daughter, she's able to follow the reasons why. Now she still screams and she still cries and she still says, don't put them in. And she'll yell and scream, and I will turn to her and say, I would rather have these in than me like lose my mind and scream at you because I'm overstimulated. Because all of the stuff that's coming at me and I can't handle it, and then I will bite back at you. I would rather have these in. So sorry, lady. And that's what we say a lot at our house. Sorry, lady. Like, I gotta have these in or I'm gonna scream in your face. So, and it's happened before. I'd like to pretend that I am a perfect parent, but I am not. I have turned around and been like, stop talking. Like, it's been really classy at this house sometimes. And so to be able to stop myself from getting to those places, I just explained to her my decisions. So there have been times when I say, oh my goodness, your behavior is absolutely awful. It is awful, and I don't enjoy being around you right now. And I hope that you will make better decisions so that we can be in a place where we don't have to feel this angry at each other. And this also comes with admitting your flaws. I have on numerous occasions said, oh my gosh, I reacted so badly there. I'm so sorry. I should not have yelled. I should not have been so upset. I should have behaved better, and I will work on it. But this brings me to the third thing that I didn't even know I was going to say. You're not perfect. You do it bad. I imagine maybe everyone out there is better than me, but I imagine that you mess up. I imagine that you stumble and you fall and you do stuff. There was one person who was on the support group page who was like, is it bad if I do this? It feels violent. And this other lady's like, I did that before. And while it stopped the raging and the violence, it did feel too much, you know? And there are times when we're so desperate and we try things and we have to remember them too. There are times when they feel desperate and they try things and it's the wrong thing. And man, there's so many of those times. But there's also times when you think, I just lost my mind, and you don't have a history of neglect or drugs in utero. Like, this full circles back into the whole, they have a disability that we can't see. And it's not fair. It's not fair to those of us who are taking care of someone else's children when they couldn't do it and they gave these kids in a place where they developed in all of these difficult ways. It isn't fair. It's not. And it's not easy. When I say it's not easy, I mean, it is just flat out hard. But my hope is that one time I could be able to sit and look at my daughter and just see the broken, fragmented pieces inside and be able to look past that at her soul and see who she really is in there. I had the luck of being able to see it when she was 5 months old and came to our house for a week before she came to us at 11 months old. But sometimes you don't get to see it, and it's hard, and the world can't see it, and it's so hard. But maybe, just maybe, if we sit here and we can put ourselves in a place where we remember that it's because of the neglect and the alcohol and the malformations and the inexperience with who they are as a person from that first building block of the pyramid that they're missing, maybe we can make it through. Maybe it'll be okay. A lot of these children struggle and get into bad things, but many of them also just take an extra 10 years to develop, and maybe it'll be okay. And maybe, just maybe, if we see past all of these disabilities at who they are, maybe that will go a whole lot faster. Maybe we will be able to offer them something that will help that gap of development close, where they can be more like all the other kids that they really want to be like, even though they don't know how. Regardless of your choice, I wish each of you parents of these hard kids just so much good in your life. I wish that for you that good decisions will be made and that you will be content in those decisions. And I wish you all the best. Thanks so much for joining me.